Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:19 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is March 9th. This has been one of the biggest declines on stock markets in a number of years, and there are a number of reasons behind it. But the kinds of downward dynamics we're seeing are the kinds of things that make people sit up, pay attention. It is the kind of time when emergency investment committee meetings are called. It's when people are on the phone and talking about what to do with the portfolio, how to relate to clients, what are we to do, is it time to take profits, what about the tax implications of taking those profits, would it be worth sitting it out, or how bad is it and how much bad news has been priced in. All of these kinds of questions are going to be running around the world, and it's a particularly important time to remain calm and to assess the situation. So let's first take a look at, for example, the S&P 500. And I'm going to look at it with both a 200-day and a 1,000-day moving average. We've pulled back extraordinarily violently. Until Friday, it would have been reasonable to conclude that we hadn't yet had a failed upside break. That went completely out the window today. So this is definitely a failed upside break. In fact, I had written it up as a failed upside break on Friday, except that the market rallied pretty impressively into the close. But with the price war going on now between Saudi Arabia and Russia in the oil market, that has sapped investor sentiment. And the pace of the infection rate from the coronavirus continues to trend higher, particularly in Europe and North America. The consistency of the S&P 500 has been that over the course of the last decade, it has sustained every single breakout from a medium-term trading range. And on this occasion, it has not sustained the breakout. So that's a major trend in consistency. The size of the pullback and the severity of the pullback is certainly a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. So that's an additional inconsistency. The hallmark of buying the dip is buying the dip strategies are by far the most successful for any medium to long-term bull market. Investors get conditioned that it's time to buy the dip when they get a pullback to the region of the trend mean. So we saw some of that over the last couple of weeks. The really big buying opportunities in a secular bull market occur from the region of the 1,000-day moving average. But what I was pointing out at the beginning of last week, I think I will link to that commentary in here today, is in order to get to the 1,000-day moving average on this occasion, we'll have had to endure some really quite significant trend inconsistencies. So then the question is, I think, less about whether we're going to see a bounce from the region of the 1,000-day moving average, but rather whether the 200-day moving average now represents resistance. So there is the clear potential that what we are seeing today is a failed upside break, massive reaction against the prevailing trend, which is potentially type 2 top formation characteristics. And with a type 2, it's really normal to see a period of right-hand extension and potentially a first step below the peak. That's something that we often see. It's not something that is guaranteed. Now, when we look at the NASDAQ 100, it has been exhibiting relative strength, and it is now right in the region of the upper side of the underlying trading range, and it's in the region of the trend mean. But the problem is that having seen the S&P 500 breaking downwards and seeing Dow Jones, in fact, approximating the region of the 1,000-day moving average today, and the Dow Jones clearly has the failed upside break pulling back right to the region of the lower side of the range and the 1,000-day moving average. And 2,000 points on the downside is really rather significant. Now the question is whether this is going to represent potential support. If it is, we're going to have to see a rally pretty soon. And it is rather the do-or-die moment. The 1,000-day moving average has offered support on multiple occasions over the last decade. Now, when we then look at the mid-caps, I think the Russell 2000 had been right at the end, at the lower side of its range, and now it is broken downwards. It does tend to be more volatile, and the 1,000-day moving average has offered support, but it does tend to dip beneath it. We are now right in the region of the lows from early 2019, and from there we saw a very significant rebound. The big question for investors right now is, are the potential for massive monetary and fiscal stimulus going to be too blunt instruments to reignite investor sentiment? The problem is that the healthcare sector in Italy, for example, is becoming inundated with hundreds of new cases flooding in. The reaction of the administration there has been to lock down Lombardia, and that's obviously a problem. The question is, however, is it going to get worse? And this graphic from Henrik Enderlin from Twitter, I thought was rather interesting, and I can't verify whether it is true or not, but this is certainly representative of the fear that is circulating in the internet, and it is that Germany has got a very similar trajectory to the number of cases that Italy does, except with approximately a 10-day lag. What that suggests is that tomorrow, then we're probably going to see somewhere in the region of 1,100 or 1,700 cases. And that is going to represent a significant headwind to growth in Europe. So let's then think about the Eurostox index. This is all of the Eurozone countries. It had got up to make a new recovery high just 3 weeks ago. It has now failed in spectacular fashion, and it is coming right back down now already to the lows put in 2019. The market does tend to test new central bankers, and Christine Lagarde's honeymoon is over. Now the question is, what is the ECB going to do? They don't have a lot of runway to lower interest rates. So it is going to be about their willingness to go out there and start buying bonds aggressively, or other liquidity measures. But the kind of underperformance we're seeing in the banking sector, not just in Europe, it is a condition we're seeing in banking sectors everywhere. And the commonality that we're seeing in the deterioration of banks is significant, because it points towards a crunch in terms of their ability to make a profit. And if banks can't make a profit, then they can't extend credit. And if they can't extend credit, then that is going to inhibit the liquidity of the wider economy. So that is one of the reasons why the banking sector has been underperforming. But what it means is there's going to have to be a very clear incentive for investors to think that the central banks of the world are going to do whatever it takes, because it's going to require that kind of verbiage to, I think, reinstill some confidence in investors. And despite the fact that we've had these very acute declines, we are going to have to see the trajectory of news stop getting worse. The problem is that one of the reasons why South Korea has been able to at least get on top of its outbreak has because they've been extremely aggressive in testing people. The one thing that is very characteristic of the response to the US outbreak right now is the reluctance to test more people. It's almost as if they're adopting a don't ask, don't tell attitude towards testing for the coronavirus. When testing does ramp up, and there are still questions about the cost of testing. I was talking with somebody yesterday who a colleague of theirs had come back from traveling in Asia. They were worried about whether they'd picked it up or not, so they wanted to go get tested. They went to the hospital in New York, and they were tested, and then they were presented with a bill for $3,500. Well, if testing's not free, or as close to free as makes no difference, it's going to inhibit the willingness of people to go out and get tested. Nobody wants to get bad news, but it's going to inhibit the ability of the health officials to try and contain the outbreak. And this is a real potential threat. There are people coming off of cruise ships all over the world that are infected with this virus, and they're going home to all over the world and spreading it around. So that is obviously going to represent a real clear and present risk of things getting worse before they get better. Now, of course, then we have the whole question about the oil price. And crude oil today was down $10. What I find interesting is the intraday action, where we had a swift rebound and then a lot of trading around in a band between about $31 and $37, and it finished pretty much in the middle of that band in here today. My initial reaction on seeing that last night was, well, golly, this is a massive acceleration on the downside. We're right in the region of a previous low. It's probably a buy. But it's also probably also the first volley in what is likely to be a potentially prolonged trade war between Saudi Arabia and Russia. There are a number of reasons for it. The first, of course, is that Russia declined to participate in Saudi Arabia's plan to inhibit or to restrict supply. So that has broken the arrangement between OPEC and Russia. Russia might have been less likely to do so because of the USA being now one of the biggest producers, and I think they hit a record number of barrels produced in the last couple of months. But also, the Trump administration has been actively campaigning to boost export markets for the U.S. crude. And they have, I think, successfully scuppered the Nord Stream 2 pipeline into Germany, which is a direct affront to Russia's ability to export oil into Germany. There is, an additional geopolitical aspect to that. It's that Russia has to at least play nice with some of the former Soviet states in Eastern Europe because its pipelines traverse those countries. If Russia had a direct export terminal directly into Germany, then it wouldn't have nearly the same incentive to abide by international agreements or to just refrain from becoming much more active militarily in Eastern Europe. So there are geopolitical reasons for why the Nord Stream pipeline should not go ahead. But obviously, Russia is not going to stand idly by and accept that kind of affront. Then, of course, there is the point that Russia has now gained a very significant foothold in the Middle East through its activities in Syria. They are, and there was obviously the event last week that killed a number of servicemen from Turkey, and now they're picking a fight with Saudi Arabia. Of course, Russia is also a key ally of Iran. So there is a lot of geopolitical activity going on around the energy sector, and they are quite literally attempting to break the Saudi Arabian monarchy. Now, if that is the correct conclusion, well, it would be rash to expect a significant rally in the oil price. We have a very oversold condition in the short term, so there is certainly the potential for a rebound in here, but it would be very difficult to make a bullish case beyond the capacity for a short-term low. There is obviously then going to be significant upward pressure on high yield spreads. And when we look at an up-to-date price, the high yield spread is currently at 1,080 basis points and surging higher in here right now. There is the clear potential that we are going to get up to the levels posted back in early 2016 for this spread. Of course, it is also putting the fact that high yield energy represents such a large proportion of junk bonds, well, that is obviously then putting pressure on high yield spreads as well. And the iShares high yield ETF just pulled back right to the region of the low from 2019, from a reasonably steady level last week. So this is a really quite profound move in terms of the pricing of high yield, and we can see that this is now yielding 5.37%. But the bigger question, of course, is, and I think this is the primary way to look at what's going on, because we're certainly going to get value being realized in a number of sectors. When, for example, we look at the effect that the coronavirus is having on the airline sector, it's negative, but the massive decline in oil prices should be positive, and energy is a very significant cost for the airline sector. So Delta Airlines, for example, was not down nearly as much as the wider market in here today, which I think is probably the best way to characterize it. Some of the weaker ones, like United, are still trending downwards. Obviously, there is a significant knock-on effect for the energy sector from much lower energy prices. And we had a meaningful drawdown in Royal Dutch Shell in here today, and it is now right on the region of the lows from 2016, going from 2,800 to 1,300 in the space of 18 months is a incredibly profound move. And the share currently yields 11.27%. Now, of course, the question is going to be, how well are they going to be able to sustain the dividend? But even if they halve the dividend, it's still going to yield 5.5%. So from the perspective of yield-hungry investors, we know that there are values that are starting to become attractive. And once we see a peak in the infection rate, then the quantity of money and monetary and fiscal stimulus that is being thrown at the market in order to arrest the declines is going to create a very clear value orientation in markets. But it may take 3 or 4 months for that to, in fact, be realized. And between now and then, there is the scope for a great deal of volatility to weigh on stock prices. I think the most significant way to think about what's going on right now is to look at everything that people were worried about last year. People were worried about the leverage in the fracking sector, that a number of the companies had borrowed a ton of money and they were not making money at prevailing prices for energy at the time. Well, the coronavirus and now the trade war between Saudi Arabia and Russia just makes that worse. and we're likely to see a number go bankrupt. But what we're also likely to see is that some of the companies that can prosper will. And I thought it was particularly interesting that Southwest Energy in here today had an upside key reversal. And it's got an estimated PE of 4. So obviously, there's a lot of bad news already priced in. And this was a share that had traded at 50, and now it's at 150. So this was a pretty troubled company before we had this significant decline. Cabot Oil and Gas is among the cheapest producers of natural gas from the Marcellus Shale. Now, the share had originally been really quite firm in here today, and we're likely to see some additional ranging because anywhere there's a profit is currently getting taken. But it is these kinds of companies may survive, whereas there are certainly going to be highly levered companies that are going to go bust. When we think about the fact that corporate profits have been going nowhere for the last 5 years, well, the chances are that the coronavirus is probably just going to make that worse, and that we're going to see a meaningful deterioration in corporate profits in the first and potentially even the second quarters. Now, what I think people are certainly hoping for is that the coronavirus is going to dissipate when weather gets warmer. But if it becomes endemic, then there's the potential it's going to flare up again in the autumn and winter. So in that regard, it is perhaps more like the Spanish flu. That is something that I think investors have to be willing to pay attention to. When we think about what's going on in the UK has not yet had the same kind of spread that they've had in Italy or indeed in France. But one has to question how long that is going to last. There is obviously the clear downward dynamic that we've just seen from the FTSE 250. This is a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. It's a much faster reaction than we saw in 2018. But the most important thing is that every single time, with the possible exception of right in the middle of 2016, we've had higher major reaction lows. So there is the potential here that this is going to break the decade-long bull market. And I think this is one of the clear risks that we have here. Monetary policy does beat most other factors most of the time. What I think we need to consider in this environment is that monetary policy will beat these factors eventually, but perhaps not right away. That is, I think, the biggest risk. The fact that we have high yield spreads that are rising, we have banking sectors that are underperforming, we have volatility that has popped above the 50 area, and then we have people, the consumer activity, where people are curtailing spending. And particularly, and it's certainly being seen first in the conferences, in tourism, in airlines, certainly in cruise lines. That's obviously a significant issue. We're not really yet seeing it in the restaurant sector, but it's inevitable that if we get wider spread of this virus, that it's going to result in people just delaying or cancelling their plans to go out to dinner. So that's obviously a challenge as well. Well, if restaurants can't keep the doors open, then they have problems making payroll, they have problems with their rent. We've already seen what China has done to try and mitigate that risk. They have basically said that they're not going to collect on loans. There won't be any defaults while this crisis is going on. But Are we going to see the same kind of measures implemented elsewhere? That's still very much open to question. And it is that uncertainty that is having this downward pressure on the markets. There is, I think, what I find particularly interesting is the delayed reaction that we're seeing. The fact that Germany is experiencing problems after Italy, France after Italy, the UK behind both of those, different parts of the USA experiencing differing rates of the viral growth. And India has so far been preserved. But considering the size of the population and the under development of the healthcare system, there is the clear potential that this is going to represent a significant problem for Italy, for India. It's also likely to create an incredible buying opportunity, because the decline in energy prices, the decline and the knock-on effect that's going to have for the profitability of mines, which will help to increase supply of industrial resources, is something that will allow the RBI to cut interest rates. It will remove some of the inflationary pressures, and it will create the kind of stimulative environment that will allow a country like India to rebound probably faster than other markets, but not until after they have had the outbreak and get control of it, and we haven't seen that yet. So there is risk here that India is not going to be able to continue to hold on to its relative strength, and it has now broken its sequence of higher reaction lows. So we may now be seeing the first signs of topping activity, and we have to bear in mind that the valuation is not cheap. The Nifty index is trading at a PE of 20. And we've had failed upside breaks, and the most recent of those has now broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. So I think the risk in some of the emerging markets, particularly those with higher population densities, is really rather acute. And as as investors around the world start to take some money off the table, then it's going to sap interest in these emerging markets. So the Indian rupee is continuing to weaken. When we then think about China, well, the renminbi in here today was a little weaker. And when we think about the kinds of support that the Chinese economy is getting, it has contributed to the CSI 300 being reasonably well bid, but it was also in negative territory in here today. The big question is, how quickly is China going to be able to get back to work, and have they really got the handle on their outbreak? And we just don't know the answer to those questions. There is still a lot of uncertainty. There are a lot of questions we don't know the answer to. And that suggests that there is potential for additional drawdowns. There is the clear potential that we are on the front edge of a recession. And what is particularly interesting is that the yield curve spread contracted in here today, and it's down now to about 16 basis points. So we're not seeing the kind of liquidity issues yet that would point towards urgent risk of a recession. But the stock market is one of the best lead indicators we have, and it is becoming inconsistent. So that is by far the most important thing to bear in mind, that the consistency of trends has been deteriorating. Now let's take a look at some of the largest companies. So Apple is now approximating the region of its trend mean. And Microsoft is right in the region of its trend mean. These, of course, represent by far the most significant companies internationally. Google is testing the $1,200 area. Netflix has been among the better performers, but it was also pulling back in here today. But I do think that this kind of environment is going to be beneficial for companies that are not reliant on face-to-face contact and the provision of services over the internet where people can consume the product without ever meeting anybody is something that should prosper, not least as people spend more time at home. So we know that the risk from a pandemic has been rising or has been present for decades, and we just do not have experience with how to deal with it. And I think we're rapidly gaining that experience, but the uncertainty surrounding it and the way that this virus is spreading sporadically around the world is creating centers of risk in different areas at different times. And also, every new case and every new center that we see that it gets, it increases the potential that it's going to spread to other areas. That's really the hallmark of a pandemic. It hasn't been labeled a pandemic yet, but it is obvious that that is what we're being presented with. And that means that risk is certainly increasing. Now, the gold price was rather volatile in here today, but it did finish up on the day about $3. Gold is obviously something that benefits in an environment where we're going to have close to zero interest rates in most of the world, if not fully zero, and then also the potential for significant fiscal stimulus. We're quite likely to get to a point where we are as close to full-on helicopter money as anyone might wish to argue about. So that is obviously one of the clear reasons why people should be interested in gold. Then it's also one of the reasons why the gold miners were should be relatively stable in here, although they did close on the low of the day in here today. With low energy prices, the profitability of mines is going to improve. Then the continued strength of the gold price means that when they start reporting first quarter profits usually in April, then we're likely to see substantial profit growth and surprises on the upside. So that would suggest to me that we're being presented with a buying opportunity in some of the gold miners that we haven't seen in a while, and that as long as gold prices continue to hold firm, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to them finding support. Silver was in negative territory in here today, but it has closed right in the region of the trend mean. And platinum was also in negative territory, and instead of finding support in the region of the moving average, it has now encountered resistance there. I'm not going to hold this position if it drops through $850. The other, I think, rather interesting movement we had today was in Bitcoin, and the price pulled back by $1,200 and has now clearly broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. So this is a significant trend inconsistency, and it suggests that investors are taking profits wherever they can find them. And this is representative of contagion selling. It's part of the reason why gold shares have been weak. It's why gold was not surging on the upside in here. Investors are taking profits wherever they can in order to make up for the losses that they have in other parts of their portfolio. And it is contagion selling that creates some of the most attractive buying opportunities in value-driven assets. So we're perhaps not quite there yet, but it is the kind of time to be thinking about a potential shopping list, because this virus, however bad it gets, is still likely to be temporary. But the incredible monetary and fiscal stimulus that's going to be introduced will be medium term in nature. So that virtually ensures there will be a buying opportunity that you just don't see all that often. I think with that, I will leave you for today, but I wish all the best to all of you.